This is Digital Story Podcast number 788, April 27th, 2021. Today's theme is a new DSLR totally out of the question? I'm Derek Story. With all the mirrorless announcements from Sony, Canon, Nikon, and others, it seems as though the DSLR is going the way of the film camera. But there's one holdout against this trend, Pentax. And the just-announced Pentax K3 Mark III has some truly interesting features, including outstanding high ISO performance. So are the reports of the DSLR death greatly exaggerated? We'll explore this idea on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I must admit, I'm a bit fascinated by this camera. I'm talking about the Pentax K3 Mark III. And first of all, I'm fascinated because it's a DSLR. They have been working on this for a while now. I believe the release has been delayed at least 6 months. And here we are in 2021, almost the middle of 2021, with announcements from Canon about their high-profile mirrorless. Nikon's hanging on. You know, Sony has just released another batch of great cameras this year. And Pentax comes out with a DSLR. I mean, really fascinating. So, you know, I'm looking at this thing. And at first, I'm a bit skeptical. And I'm a Pentax shooter, right? I have a Pentax KP, which was, I think, their last cropped sensor camera, APS-C. And I love that camera. I mean, I absolutely love that camera. I love the way it renders images. The lenses I have for it are terrific. I mean, it's compact. It's just a great camera. And I use it for my professional work quite a bit, especially for my work out in the field when I do coverage for the JC, for public relations, things like that. It's just a terrific camera. It has a pop-up flash, all that good stuff. So it's not like I'm not familiar with Pentax DSLRs or Pentax film cameras or any of the K-mount lenses going all the way back to the 1980s. I'm well aware of Pentax, and yet I'm looking at this camera, the K3 Mark III, and going, wow, that really takes guts, right? That really takes guts. So I start digging into the specs, and I'm going to share some of the specs now. And the more I read about it, the more interested I became in it. And then I think what really put me over the top, and I'm going to talk about this after I go over the specs, which was an article that was on Petapixel titled "A High ISO Shootout, Pentax K3 Mark III versus the Sony A7 III. And some of you may have seen that article and looked at the pictures. I'll talk more about it. But essentially, it showed its high ISO performance, the Pentax, and just how well it did against this full-frame Sony. So now I'm looking at those pictures and I'm going, okay, all right, okay. I have to be open-minded about this. I'm a journalist. I cover everything, right? Well, not everything, but I try to cover as many things as possible and as cleanly as possible. So as I started digging into the specs, I'm going to share with you right now, I started thinking, okay, maybe the DSLR isn't dead. I don't know. So we'll get back to that in a few minutes. Let's look at these specs. So first of all, high ISO performance for this K3 Mark III. And I mean very high. From a low of 100 to 1,600,000 ISO performance. All right, that is nuts. And you can just shoot away at whatever, you know, 6,400 or whatever, no problem, and not even think about it. Not even think about it. All right, so crazy high ISO performance. Now, one thing that they invested a lot of time is their optical viewfinder. And I get the thinking here because they're saying, all right, if you're going to buy a DSLR, you probably want to look through an optical viewfinder Otherwise, you have a million mirrorless electronic viewfinders to choose from. So if that's the reason why you're buying a DSLR, or at least a primary reason, then we want to make the best optical viewfinder you've ever looked through. And that's exactly what they tried to do here. It is a 1.05 magnification, all right? So it is 100% plus pentaprism optical viewfinder. And the pentaprism design has been updated to use high refraction glass, optimized coatings, and distortion correcting element to reduce aberrations and promote high clarity and color fidelity. Now, I have not looked through this viewfinder yet, but I want to. I want to put some of my favorite Pentax lenses on there and look through this thing, because this sounds gorgeous. And just a note on optical viewfinders. As you know, I shoot with the Fujifilm X100V, which has both an optical viewfinder and an electronic viewfinder, in addition to an LCD. One of the reasons why I really like that camera. So I shoot with an optical viewfinder a fair amount. I'm not just parking it on the electronic viewfinder and using that all the time. I actually like the optical viewfinder. I like the way the world looks, especially outside, through an optical viewfinder. Now, when I'm indoors in lower light, I have to say that electronic viewfinder is really nice. And what you can do on the Pentax K3, it has a wonderful live view. So if you need that kind of experience, then you use the 3.2-inch LCD on the back and do a live view and get that, basically, that electronic viewfinder experience on a little screen. But I do like optical viewfinders, and one of the reasons why I have the X100V is for that lovely optical viewfinder. This one sounds better. This one sounds better, and I'd love to look through it. Now, as far as the sensor itself goes, it's a crop sensor, 25.7 megapixel APS-C BSI CMOS sensor. So it sports a BSI design that promotes low noise, smooth tones, and accurate color rendering through the sensitivity range of 100 to, yes, 1,600,000 to suit working in a variety, and I think variety is definitely understated, of lighting conditions. And again, based on the pictures I saw, I have no reason to doubt that. 12 frames per second continuous shooting, so you get that DSLR sort of thing going on. Crop sensor, so that means your telephoto lenses are, you know, extended essentially, which means then this would be a very good camera for sports and wildlife and things like that. Now, we've talked about the introduction of machine learning, AI, all that kind of stuff into our cameras, not just in our smartphones. And this next thing touches on that, and this is something I expect to see more action from Olympus as well, but here we go. They have the real-time scene analysis system in this camera. So using a high-density RGBIR sensor and the Prime 5 image processor, the K3 Mark III can use the real-time scene analysis system to optimize exposure and AF accuracy by detecting subjects' faces and eyes with image recognition technology. This system relies on deep learning and AI-based technology for more accurate subject detection and scene judgment. All right, so we're definitely getting into this whole deep learning thing in a camera. And again, we're talking about a DSLR that many folks are writing off, at least that particular style of camera. So real-time scene analysis system built into the K3 Mark III. Now it has the 5-axis SR2 shake reduction system, providing 5.5 stops of effective image stabilization, but it goes beyond that. And I think Pentax does a good job of leveraging their sensor-based image stabilization. Here's what they say about it. Beyond controlling camera shake, the SR2 mechanism also benefits stills applications by enabling a pixel shift resolution feature and an AA filter simulation function. Pixel shift resolution shifts the sensor in small increments in sequential shots in order to capture full color information at each pixel site, then composites these sequential frames to produce a single image with richer detail and resolution. The AA filter simulator, on the other hand, utilizes microscopic vibrations during the capture process to help mitigate moiré in order to produce clean renderings of fabrics and other high-frequency materials. That, to me, is really clever. This system works in conjunction with the sensor that lacks an AA filter, so you have the choice between gaining the most resolution or reducing moiré under specific scenarios. That's pretty neat. So that SR2 shake reduction system basically wears three different hats. You know, it has the AA filter simulator, it allows you to do pixel shift resolution, and it gives you up to 5.5 stops of image stabilization. The phase detection AF looks pretty good, updated with more points and improving coverage. The autofocus sensor is phase detection focusing system that uses 101 individual points, including 25 cross-type sensors in the middle of the image frame. The array benefits focusing speed and accuracy in a variety of lighting conditions down to -4 EV, which is pretty good. Additionally, the new 307,000 pixel RGB IR sensor and the new tracking algorithm also promote more accurate tracking of subjects, even when moving at varying speeds or in irregular directions. So those are the basic specs. And then it has a lot of things that you would expect from a Pentax camera. It has, you know, the great weather sealing. It has both a microphone port and a headphone jack. It has 4K at 30 frames per second. So there's a lot of other things. It has two SD card slots, not just one, but it has two SD card slots. So this is a well-specified camera. Now, it should be based on the price tag, because it is $1,996. So you are basically buying a pro DSLR crop sensor camera if you're interested in this particular device. Now, I want to talk about this high ISO performance. So as I mentioned earlier, I found this article, The High ISO Shootout, and was really amazed at the performance of the Pentax. Let me read you what the author said, and there are a bunch of pictures. Of course, the link is in the show notes, so you can go and you can look at the pictures at all these different ISOs from both the Pentax and the Sony a7 III. Alrighty, but this is what the author said. Image quality is outstanding up to ISO 6400 and still looks clean at ISO 12800. Even ISO 25600 looks good enough to print up to A3 if, like me, you don't mind a little bit of grain. Heck, if all you need is a small postcard print and the noise is not a bother, you can go as high as ISO 204,800 in some cases and still get an acceptable image. For this comparison, I decided to go with the highly regarded Sony a7 III. Please note that this is nothing more than a look at how far APS-C technology has come in that it can compete with the larger sensor. This is not a brand comparison. Looking at ISO 100 to 1600, there is no visible difference between both cameras. Even going up to ISO 6400 and ISO 12800, I can't see any advantage on either side. ISO 25600 is where I'm really surprised. The APS-C Pentax looks slightly cleaner to me than the full-frame camera. Looking at the maximum ISO on the Sony of 204,800, they are both pretty much the same. Huh. Okay. So, there you have some interesting notes. So, let's review what we're talking about here. Talking about a camera that has great high ISO performance. It has you know, some of the modern features built into it, such as deep learning and things like that. This really fantastic sensor-based system that, you know, does multiple things. And the point that I'm trying to make here is not so much I'm trying to sell anyone on the Pentax K3 Mark III. We all buy the cameras that we want for a variety of reasons. But what I am saying is that if someone is concerned that by buying a DSLR, they're buying old technology. In other words, they're buying a camera that doesn't have some of the modern technology that you would see in Canon, Nikon, Panasonic, hopefully the next round of Olympus, you know, all those brands that are in the news right now. In this case, you can buy a DSLR that has as much modern stuff practically as most other cameras on the market right now, and in some cases, even better. In some cases, even more advanced. So that really leaves us with this thought when it comes to choosing a camera. We don't have to pick a mirrorless camera to be modern. And that's really the point that I'm trying to make. If, for some reason, you want to shoot with a DSLR or you want to have a DSLR in your lineup, you enjoy the optical viewfinder, you enjoy the way they feel, you know, all those kinds of things. And especially a compact, weather-resistant DSLR, such as this Pentax. Pentax DSLRs are not much bigger, and sometimes don't feel bigger at all, than a lot of full-frame mirrorless cameras. And remember, because this is an APS-C, the lenses don't have to be as big as the lenses for a full-frame camera. So in terms of actual size, there isn't much size difference between a lot of the mirrorless cameras that are on the market right now. So if you do prefer to shoot with a DSLR, there is a modern DSLR that has everything that we're looking for right now, right there. So you can make your selection based on the kind of camera that you want to shoot with and not worry that you're buying old technology. In that regard, I'm happy to see this camera out there. I don't know how it's going to do. I don't know if it's going to push beyond traditional Pentax shooters or not. I don't even know if I'm going to shoot with one or not, in part because I love my KP so much. But I love seeing this camera out there. It really makes me happy, and it looks like Ricoh Pentax did a good job with it. Okay, let's continue with this crop sensor theme that we're talking about. Here's a piece that I found on The Photographer, and it's titled "Love Crop Sensors, Exciting Possibilities for the Future." And I have the link in the show notes so you can go over and read the whole article, and you should, because there's a lot more to the article than I'm going to cover here. But let me read you some from it, and then we'll talk about it a bit. So the internet loves to predict doom and gloom for cameras with crop sensors. We're kind of just talking about that, right? How many years have we heard that Micro Four Thirds is dead? Current offerings remain quite capable cameras. However, camera technology has been advancing rapidly. Brands like Fuji and OM Digital Solutions, referred to as OMDS from here on, heavily rely on these cameras to survive. What do they need to do to remain relevant? It seems that AI and deep learning tech are here to stay. Interviews with people at Fuji and OMDS seem to confer this. Fuji has mentioned to Imaging Resource that they are looking at AI for more than just autofocus. OMDS told DP Review that they plan to take advantage of the fast readout of their smaller sensors. So what does this mean for us? New technology could help negate the downside of crop sensors. Denoise technology has also jumped leaps and bounds. The DxO Lab and Topaz have really begun to show us what AI denoise is capable of. What if we could see full-frame, low-level light performance from Micro Four Thirds? I'm just going to put a footnote here. Or, in the case of the Pentax K3 Mark III crop sensor. All right, back to the article. If processing power and new sensor tech can deliver better signal-to-noise ratios, the possibility is there. We saw a great example of this with the Nikon Z50. However, I hope they don't go overboard here. There's definitely something about the organic feel of an image that isn't clinically clean. And of course, AI will come to play a large part in the new autofocus technology. So then he goes on and talks about, okay, some of the reasons why crop sensor cameras can stick around. For instance, Olympus had some great innovative ideas. He wants more of those. Could modular cameras be the future where you combine, for instance, the iPhone and a camera sensor and use them together? Crop sensors are great for video. So then he's asking the question, will new tech be enough to save crop sensors? And this is kind of what I was talking about in the previous story. What he says is only time will tell what the industry's brilliant engineers will do next. However, what if these technologies are implemented in larger sensor cameras too? So here's my takeaway on all of this. And this is a drum that I have been beating for a while, which is once you get away from the relationship between the lens and the size of the sensor for controlling depth of field and things like that, I don't think there is much of a difference, and I think there's going to be even less of a difference between crop sensor performance in things like high ISO, focusing speed, stuff like that. I don't think there's going to be much of a difference between crop sensors and full frame. In other words, a full frame still has the physics of the sensor with the lens. Okay, so that's always going to be an element. And you can mitigate it with smaller sensors all sorts of different ways. And we've even seen that with the iPhone in portrait mode. However, once you get away from that, then I'm thinking that this gap between full-frame cameras and crop sensor cameras, whether it be APS-C or Micro Four Thirds, it's really not going to be a relevant gap anymore. Why? Because of what he's alluding to in this article, in this Photographer article, which is technology is going to close that gap for us. And we have a really good example right now with that Pentax K3 Mark III. I think we're going to have another excellent example with what happens with Olympus Digital Solutions coming out either later this year or early next year. And you know that Fujifilm isn't sitting on their lens caps either, and that we're probably going to start to see some movement in their camp with their APS-C sensors maybe early next year. So I think this is very exciting. And what the bottom line is for a lot of us, and I'm definitely in this camp, is that I love the advantages of crop sensor cameras, both Micro Four Thirds and APS-C, because I don't want huge lenses. I am tired of huge lenses. I did that for years, for decades. I did huge lenses, and I'm tired of them, and I don't want to carry them around anymore. The lenses that I have for my Pentax DSLR, I absolutely love them. I shoot mainly with primes, and then I have one zoom lens that I use a lot, the 20 to 40 millimeter, which is an absolutely gorgeous zoom. It's pretty much the reason why I bought the DSLR, is to have that lens. But the lenses are not big, and when I'm working all day for public relations shoot, I don't want to schlep around a lot of stuff. So that smaller DSLR and those lenses are really great. For a lot of my shooting outside of that, I love the Micro Four Thirds. It's even lighter, right? It's even lighter. The lenses are even smaller. And so I want that. I love those high-quality gem-like lenses combined with technology to give me ISO performance and the other things that I want and save me all that weight. And I think that is a direction that not only are we going to see in the near future, I think it's happening right now. And I think it's very exciting. And if OM Digital Solutions comes through with a camera that truly impresses us, then I think that's going to springboard the whole Micro Four Thirds format as well. So a lot of things happening right now, and I'm excited about what Pentax just showed us that you can do with the crop sensor. And I hope Fuji takes up the challenge, right? And answers some of this technology with their own. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I think I mentioned last week that Photos for macOS Big Sur and iPhone Essential Training is out on LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. And I was just watching some of the movies from that course, and I really like it. And you know how it is when you watch your own stuff. A lot of times you go, I can't stand that. I don't know if that happens to you, but it happens to me a lot. I'm not doing that with these movies. I'm actually enjoying them a lot. As I mentioned last week, what I wanted to do with this is that I just feel that Photos is so closely tied to the iPhone now in terms of helping the iPhone leverage that great technology on things such as defocusing backgrounds in post-production, turning a live view image into a blurred water scene, a soft water scene, with a handheld iPhone, and you don't have to do anything particular other than know how to have the camera capture a certain way and then have the software, you know, do its magic. You know, this integration is fantastic. And I cover that integration. I really talk about both devices, and I have an iPad in there too because I love editing on the iPad mini. So all of this time is rolled up together, and I do cover editing extensions and all the good stuff. And if you really want to get more out of your iPhone and really learn how to stretch it and take advantage of its technologies, then take a look at this title, Photos for macOS Big Sur and iPhone Essential Training. It's on LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. And the best thing to do, really, is just go to either of those sites. I'll have a link in the show notes, but go to either of those sites, search on Derek's story, and then just take it from there. And you'll see it. You'll find it. Believe me, it should pop up pretty close to the top. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members. And by the way, Inner Circle members, I have some interesting things that I'm going to announce next week, and some of them will positively affect you. So stay tuned for that. Our Inner Circle members are the folks that support us month in and month out. They are our patrons working through Patreon to help keep this community alive, thriving, and moving forward. And that's so important. We are in such fast changing times, not only in terms of the technology for our cameras, but also in how we communicate with each other, how we do workshops, how we do all of the stuff that we're doing. And in order to change, we need to have the resources to experiment, to try things, to try new services, to do all that stuff. This is what our Inner Circle members do. They help us be able to do that so we can stay on top of the curve and not be buried by it. Thank you, Inner Circle members. And if you're interested in becoming part of this elite group of artists, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And hopefully you'll join this group of people that support this community. I've been publishing about twice a month on Medium.com. It is a terrific site that covers all sorts of different things, including photography. If you're interested in my photo articles that are on Medium, I'm really pleased with how that effort is going, then just go to Medium.com, search on Derek's story, take a look at some of the articles. They're different than what I'm publishing on the blog or in other places. I work very hard on these articles, and I'm very proud of them, and hopefully you will enjoy them as well. I haven't talked much about electric cars, electric vehicles, EV, lately, but I got the news that my Volkswagen ID.4 has left the factory and it's on its way to my dealership here in Santa Rosa, and I may see it as early as sometime in May, which is very thrilling to me. I've been getting set up at home, so I can do level 2 charging at home. Been scouting out and looking at all the different apps and finding out where I can charge on the road. Been plotting out my road trips. Been doing all that stuff. This is the kind of stuff that we cover on the EV Explorers group. And if you're interested in joining this group, it's a group that I run on our workshop site where we exchange information when we find out about new cars and new technology. We share that there, It's a lot of fun. All you have to do is click on the link in the show notes for Derek's Story Online. That'll allow you to request an invite. I'll let you in, and then you can hang out and learn about this whole movement about electric cars, which I find just fascinating, and I'm going to be working out of. This is how I'm going to do my work, not in the future, but this summer, and including some events that I'm planning now that I'll maybe talk about next week. I'll have an electric car at those events as well, okay? EV Explorers, for those interested in electric cars, and you can join us by clicking on the link in the show notes. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, the longest-running sponsor of Digital Story. This is where you go, and I'm talking about the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. This is where you go to learn about inkjet printing, to discover all the different types of paper that are available, to learn about inkjet printers, to learn about technique, to see tutorials on how to do cool things like make fine art cards. Printing is fun, printing is rewarding, and printing is artistic. And Red River Paper covers all of those areas on its site. We have a landing page, and all you have to do is click on that tile, take you to our landing page, and then from there you can nose around. My advice is to get a couple different paper stocks, have them on hand, so when inspiration strikes, you're ready to print. You don't want to have inspiration and no paper. You want to have paper when inspiration strikes. Then you can make your prints. Then you can share them with the world. Then you can say, I did this photograph, this piece of art that I have in my hand from start to finish, all the way from creation of the image to processing of it to printing it. Red River Paper helps us with that last phase. Red River Paper also has a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, and thank you so much for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Some cool stuff is going to be announced next week. Make sure you come back and join us. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.